Welcome to Bio, a podcast produced by the Biographers International Organization. Bio is devoted to promoting the work of biographers and advocating for biography as a genre, with the support of biographers and biography lovers worldwide. I'm Bio member Jenny Skoog in New York City. On each episode, we talk with biographers about their work. In this episode, I talk with Katie G. Salisbury about her book, Not Your China Doll, The Wild and Shimmering Life of Anna May Wong, published by Dutton in March 2024. This interview was recorded at the Bio Conference in New York City on May 16, 2024. Katie G. Salisbury, who is Anna May Wong to you?
Anna May Wong to me is really a hero. She's so inspiring. And I mean, that's one of the reasons I had to write a book about her, because I couldn't believe, you know, when I first learned about her 20 years ago, everyone I talked to said, "Who's that? I don't know who that is." And I just wanted to know more about her. You know, having written this book and done all the research now, I'm even more inspired by all of the things that she was able to accomplish in spite of the challenges placed in front of her. And there were so many points at which she could have quit and just said, you know what, I'm done with this. I'm not going to even bother anymore. But she always picked herself back up and gave it another go. So to me, she is a hero, and she's a trailblazer, and she's an important figure in early Hollywood history that everyone should know about.
Tell me about your family's connection to Anna May Wong.
So I'm part Chinese, and my mother is Chinese American, was born in Los Angeles, Chinatown, and grew up there for the first 5 years of her life. And so I had always grown up with a sense of history about my Chinese American family. I mean, you know, we would take trips down to Chinatown pretty frequently. We'd always go for Chinese New Year. We'd go to a big dim sum hall that was there. My mom would bring out our embroidered Chinese jackets that we'd put on. So it was always a very special occasion. And my mother had these photographs hanging in her office at home of her as a little girl with her grandfather, my great-grandfather, who was actually quite important in Los Angeles Chinatown. He was president of the Chinese Benevolent Association. I've been told that no other person was president for as many terms as he served. And he saw a lot of changes throughout the years. I mean, Chinatown in Los Angeles actually started out where Union Station is now. Eventually, that was all demolished and moved, and then parts of Chinatown were demolished again for the 101 freeway. And a lot of Chinatown entrepreneurs and businessmen, small business owners, got together and decided to rebuild Chinatown, which is called New Chinatown. Even though it was built in 1938, it's still considered the New Chinatown. And so they were really visionaries, and my great-grandfather was a part of that. Just back to the photographs that my mother had in her office were of her and her grandfather at some kind of important function where they had the Miss Chinatown pageant winners. And he was posing for photographs with them. And she's there, you know, just his granddaughter that he wants to show off. And that was taken probably in the early 1950s. And there's just a kind of nostalgic Americana and glamour to those photographs that have just like penetrated my own childhood, even though it wasn't something I experienced, but I just remember looking at those photographs so fondly. And so when I first learned about Anna May Wong, I was doing a college internship at the Chinese American Museum in Los Angeles. And the first day, the curator gave me a tour, and it was photographs of LA Chinatown through the years, and there was a photograph of a woman in a convertible in a parade. And I didn't know who she was, and I asked, and I was told her name's Anna May Wong, and she was this internationally famous Chinese-American movie star from the 1920s and 30s. I was just so, like, flabbergasted. I couldn't believe that someone like her had existed in that era. I mean, it's very rare that you see historical photos of Asian Americans. I mean, they were certainly there, but we don't see them that often, so you forget that they were a part of our history. So I was surprised to see her looking so chic and beautiful and interesting, and wanted to know more. But I also felt this sense of injustice that, wow, no one's ever told me about this woman, even though I've grown up in an Asian American community. My mom grew up in Chinatown. She didn't really know who she was. And then everyone I talked to didn't really seem to know much about her. And this was like the early days of the internet, too. So, you know, went on and was like, oh, my God, there's all these photographs of her. That really put me on the path to wanting to learn more about her. But I also felt a kinship because our families were both, you know, American-born Chinese, came from the same region in southern China called Toisan. She was born in Los Angeles. My mom was born in Los Angeles near Chinatown, or in Chinatown, actually. And they were both kind of very young and hip rebels in their own way. So there was a lot of things that reminded me of my mother and my own family. And so in a way, writing and researching Anna May Wong's life was a way for me to look into my own family history.
So I want to get right into it. You decide to write a biography of Anna May Wong. Where did you begin this process? Where did you get funding? Where did you begin your research? Did you write a letter to the descendants? Like, how did you make that first step and what was it?
So I started by reading Graham Hodges' book on Anna May Wong, which was published about 20 years ago, really the first scholarly biography of her life and career, and kind of did all the groundwork for everyone else that came later. So I spent a lot of time with his book and going through the sources that he used. And so one of the first things I did was I went to the New York Public Library Performing Arts Library, and I was trying to look up this, actually a two-part memoir that Anna May Wong had written herself in a movie magazine called Pictures, and it was only available on microfilm. A lot of other things are digitized now, but this particular piece was only on microfilm, and it actually seemed very important because it's her writing about her own story, right? So that's where I wanted to start, and it took me like several trips to figure it out because there had actually been a mistake in the call number. So every time I'd call it up, it was like, it's not here. Where is it? So that was kind of like my introduction to research, that, you know, you have to be relentless and try all different things because you don't know where things are hidden. You know, there's all archival materials. I mean, generally they're pretty organized, but they can, you know, years can go by before anyone calls them up. So that's how it started. And so that was 2019. Then I also made a trip to Yale, the Beneke Library, where they have her correspondence with Carl Van Vechten that actually, I think, covers almost 40 years. So it's quite extensive, and it's really the only personal papers that she left, I mean, through him, essentially. I mean, other than the interviews and essays that she wrote for magazines. So I started there and then put together a book proposal. So my background, I actually used to work as a book editor, and actually I still do, but I'm freelance now. So once I went freelance, I had more flexibility, and I really wanted to focus in on this book because I had thought about it for a long time. I mean, I had thought about when I was still working at HarperCollins as an assistant editor. I had worked on Sam Wasson's book, Fifth Avenue, 5 a.m., about the making at Breakfast at Tiffany's. And that gave me an idea like, oh, maybe that's the way I could write about Anna May Wong. And of course, you know, it took me some time to actually get the gumption up to do that and then do some of the research. And so 2019, I put together a book proposal. My agent sold it at the end of February 2020. And then like a week later, everything shut down in the world because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So it was a weird time to like try and celebrate something, a major milestone in my life, my first book. And then figure like, well, is the world going to be here at the end of all of this? But actually, you know, it turned out that by that time, so many things had been digitized. And so I was able to do a lot of newspaper research, a lot of digital, the Media History Digital Library online that has a lot of movie magazines. I ordered a lot of out of print books that were like biographies and memoirs of other contemporaries in Hollywood during that time. So actually, the solitude it gave me was great. So I did a lot of research that way. And then once things opened up, started doing archival visits to more visits to the New York Public Library, to the Academy Library in Los Angeles, and various other places.
This book was such a joy to read. You give historical texture to the film industry, Harlem during the 1920s, and what it must have been like when she arrived in Berlin after the Great War, with all the paved streets and new architecture. To what extent did you have to become a historian in writing this biography?
It did really feel like I was becoming a historian to some extent. I mean, a very limited historian, right? Like I would kind of drop into each era or location and figure out what was going on there, how would it differ from where she came from in Los Angeles. That was the joy of doing that. It was quite fun. I mean, to learn about what was going on in other places around the world. The Weimar era Berlin scene, I mean, is so different from, you know, hometown Los Angeles. I mean, you know, Hollywood was a wild place, but this was a much wilder place. And so I really wanted to find a way to bring in the context of the world that she was living in, especially because she lived through such an interesting period of history. I mean, when you really think about, I mean, being born in 1905, watching Los Angeles become a city and Hollywood become an industry, and she was a part of that. imagining her traveling by ship places where you know, she's never been to Europe. She's 23. What is it going to be like when I get there? I don't speak a word of German. So there's some of the romance of that as well. But, you know, and then later in her career, I mean, you see how certain opportunities end. Like, she doesn't make more films in Germany because by that time Hitler comes to power. They're not going to make films with the Chinese actress. Then the war happens. She never, you know, she only makes one trip to China. She had always planned to go back, but that opportunity closes as well. So there's just a lot of interesting things throughout history that are happening in tandem with her own career. It was fun for me because, you know, now that I've lived in New York for 15 years, I'm from Southern California originally. So, you know, people often say it's easier to write about a place when you're not there. And so in a way, it also gave me time to really understand and appreciate the history of California and the West and everything that was going on there. I mean, the Chinese immigration, building the Transcontinental Railroad. I mean, these very like monumental moments in Western history that, you know, when we learn them in high school, we're not quite like as attuned to just how world changing they were. And, you know, she was a part of that. Her family as American born Chinese were also a part of that.
You write in the acknowledgments that other biographers shared their research when your subjects overlapped. Tell me about your working relationship with Susan Bloomberg Kaysen and her subject and how you two collaborated.
I'm actually hoping to meet Susan in person for the first time today, this evening at the Bio International Conference. I feel like we're friends and I feel like I know her. We've been corresponding for years now over our, you know, mutual subjects. So she recently wrote a biography of Bernadine Sold Fritz, who was kind of a Jewish socialite, but a salon hostess. She was very cosmopolitan and she ended up living in Shanghai for a number of years. She married a man who lived there. So Anna Mae Wong and Bernadine had a lot of mutual friends. They were all friends with the Van Vechtens, among many other people. But they didn't actually cross paths in a way where they became friends until Anna Mae Wong makes her trip to China in 1936. And so I found out about Susan's research actually after she published an article about their friendship, I think in Miss Magazine. And so I reached out immediately because she had some really interesting material in her piece, including photographs of Anna Mae Wong that Bernadine had taken of her in the Chinese countryside, photos that no one has ever seen before. And it just ended up being this really wonderfully collaborative relationship where I shared correspondence that I had from Anna Mae Wong, where Bernadine, you know, came up again because Bernadine later moves to Hollywood. So they continued to be friends for many years. Susan was just so gracious. She shared so many materials with me. I mean, in addition to these photos that she had found from Bernadine's cousins, there were also some manuscripts that Bernadine had wrote and never published that were like these really lovely snapshots of different people and places that she was going and meeting. And there's a page that basically contains her first impression of Anna Mae Wong. And it's this really beautiful several paragraphs. I mean, her prose is so incisive, but I did use a part of it as one of the epigraphs to the book. So Bernadine writes this first impression of Anna Mae Wong, and she describes her. She says, "She seemed like a finely polished flint in the midst of a stack of moldy corn husks. The impression remained strongly that here was a person of force and character, of great inner unity and strength." And I just was like, wow, she really got Anna Mae Wong. She knew exactly what she was like. I mean, I couldn't ask for a better description from someone who knew her. So that material was just so enlightening and compelling. And anyway, so it was this great thing where, you know, Anna Mae Wong and Bernadine were friends in real life, and now their biographers are also friends in real life. That's kind of what happens when your subject is friends with somebody else. You become friends with their biographer. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely, I think, a lovely story. And the other thing, too, is that because I learned so much more about their friendship, it made me realize that, well, Yale also has correspondence from Bernadine and Anna Mae Wong, as well as correspondence between Bernadine and Fania, who was the wife of Carl Van Vechten. So it finally occurred to me that I should look at the correspondence between two friends to see if they ever spoke about Anna Mae Wong when she wasn't there, right? When she's not in the room, so to speak. And I actually did find something towards the end of my research day at Yale. It was this letter from Fania to Bernadine, and this is in the mid-1950s, describing a visit from Anna Mae Wong. She was on her way to London, and she stops in New York. And this is a very difficult period of her life. She was struggling a lot with not being in the limelight anymore. She had aged quite a bit. She wasn't getting film parts, and she was trying to transition into television. And so she had been drinking a lot to cope with that situation. And so Fanny describes a lunch that Anna May Wong had with Carl Van Vechten and another friend. And apparently she showed up to it so drunk that they had to carry her out and take her back to her hotel. And then Fanny confronts her about it, and it becomes this whole thing. And Anna May Wong, you know, does not take kindly to being confronted about it. And so they never speak of it again, even though they remain friends. But that was like such a shocking discovery that I would never have come to on my own if I hadn't met Susan and knew so much about Bernadine's friendship with Anna May to begin with.
That's such a testament to collaborating with, well, female biographers, really. To what extent did you travel during your research process?
So once things opened up again during the pandemic, I started making, you know, in-person archival trips. I made a trip to London where I went to the British Film Institute so I could watch some of Anna May Wong's films, her rare European films that there are not very many copies here in the U.S. or they're hard to get hold of. I mean, it has actually changed somewhat in the last few years because more and more things are getting digitized or bootleg copies are being found and put up on YouTube. But at the time, her first German films, Song, Pavement Butterfly, and later The Flame of Love, really difficult to get copies of. So I knew I had to go to London to watch them. And it ended up being this really magical experience because, you know, I'd only read about what these films were like. I'd never seen them. And so I was sitting in a basement room at BFI, and the lovely man there, Stephen Tullervey, who runs it, he would bring me tea and biscuits. And he taught me how to spool all the film in the machine that plays it, and I would change the reels every 25 minutes. So it was also a very tactile experience. But yeah, so magical to watch her films. They're really her best and some of my favorite that she ever created. So that was a really wonderful trip. I spent a lot of time in Los Angeles at the Academy Library. I was there for about a month. So I kind of jokingly say it was my residency because everyone there got to know me pretty well. And I went through all the production files for films that she had been involved in and even films that she wasn't. I mean, you know, The Good Earth actually plays a pretty big role in the book, even though it's not a film she was ultimately cast in. So I wanted to know a lot more about how they thought about the whole production for that film. Because they were striving for so much authenticity, and yet they couldn't bring themselves to cast Asian actors in the principal role. So that was a really interesting kind of hypocrisy that I wanted to look into. And then another thing that kind of fun trip was I went up to Berkeley to the East Asian Studies Library because they have a collection of Chinese movie magazines. I minored in Mandarin in college. I'm not literate. It's very difficult to be literate in Chinese. And also these magazines were published in traditional Chinese. And I learned simplified because under Mao, they simplified the written language for literacy purposes. So added on top of that would be, even if I was literate, it'd be hard for me to read. So I had to figure out a way to like, well, how do I know what to scan, right? And so what I ended up doing was I knew what Anna May Wong's name looks like. And I could read that. So I just, you know, memorized the characters for her name and then just went through these magazines looking for her name. And everywhere I found it, I just, okay, scan it. And then I would get it translated later. So that was a little bit of an adventure, but it worked out. I mean, I got a lot of great material from that. That's the thing, too, about Anna May Wong's career. She was so international that you could, I mean, I really only touched the surface of things, but, you know, looked at materials in German, French, English, Chinese. I mean, you could go on. There's all of Europe, I think, published things about her at some point. I know there's some Japanese press. So I really only looked at the things that were relevant to the part of her life that I was interested in. And luckily, you know, I read some French. And then I have a cousin who's half German. And so she helped me with the translation for a lot of the German pieces. She translated Walter Benjamin for me. So it was in that sense, it was a very collaborative effort.
There are so many pictures of Anna May Wong out there, and you include an image at the beginning of each chapter in this book. How did you decide which images to include?
Such a good question, because there are an infinite number of photographs of Anna May Wong, right? I mean, I discover new ones almost every week, which is crazy. I mean, how many sittings did this woman do? So when I was thinking about, you know, which photos to curate for the book, having that limit was actually very helpful. And so I really thought about each chapter and kind of the themes that I was interested in exploring. I mean, of course, there's a couple bonus photos. There's my favorite photo of her, which is the one by the pool, which is facing the title page of the book. There's a photo that the first photo I ever saw of her at the Chinatown parade. And then it really, I focused in on, you know, what were the kind of milestone moments in her life, but also thinking about what are some really interesting and rare photos that I can offer up to people that they wouldn't ordinarily find on their own, right? Because, yes, I know everyone can go Google her on the internet, and there are certain photos that get repeated kind of over and over and over again, especially in any pieces that go up about her. So I wanted to be able to give people a selection of things that are a bit more rare, but also things that I felt were really special and that I had kind of come across in parts of my research. For example, I would say one of the ones I really love is Canons of Hollywood was a British photographer who did a lot of glamour shots. And he has these really wonderful photos of Anna May Wong right before she was prepared to do her cabaret show in England and across Europe. And she's wearing a tux and has a top hat and I think a little cane. And she's the shadows. I mean, it was just an incredible shot of her. And I mean, you don't see it very often anywhere else. And so I knew I wanted to have that in the book. I mean, of course, the photos that Susan helped find of that Bernadine took of Anna May Wong in the Chinese countryside. So I knew one of those had to be in the book. And then, you know, there's another kind of secret bonus photo in the back of the book that came in the 11th hour when I did some research at Hoover through a research assistant, and she went through the photos there. And it was this lovely photo of Anna May Wong standing next to a willow tree, which seems so appropriate since her Chinese name was Frosted Yellow Willows. So there's a lot of little kind of hints and maybe double meanings with a lot of them. I mean, they're paired very specifically with the chapters.
This is your first biography. What lessons did you learn as a first-time biographer that you will take forward into the next one? If there is a next one.
Will there be another biography? That is a great question, because I have often thought as I wrote this book, why did I choose to write a biography? I mean, part of it was being, you know, a newbie. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew I had to write a book about Anna May Wong. And in the process of that, I realized, oh, I'm writing a biography. One thing that I learned, I mean, is that you could really go on forever, right? You could continue researching. I mean, the amount of things that happen in one person's life, I mean, it's infinite. So you have to kind of focus in and figure out what is it that really matters to the story that I'm trying to tell about their life. That helped me actually in the research process try to weed out things that were still interesting, but maybe not a part of the narrative that I was telling in this book. One thing that also helped me, which was a nice creative outlet, is I started a newsletter. So it's called Half Cast Woman, and I kind of deep dive into a lot of interesting things or other characters who were, you know, in the same world as her, who are just not going to make it into the book. And that was a really fun for me to be able to explore those. And I found that other people were actually quite interested in them. So that was a nice outlet. But yes, if I write another biography, I think I'll give myself more time, probably give myself a longer runway to really do as much research as I feel that I need to. I mean, with the first book, it's a little different because, you know, you're under more pressure, I think, to really deliver something, and you're unproven. So hopefully in the future, I'll have a little more time if I decide to embark on another biography. We'll see.
Well, Katie G. Salisbury, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was my conversation with Katie G. Salisbury about her book, Not Your China Doll, The Wild and Shimmering Life of Anna May Wong. It was published by Dutton in March 2024. This interview was recorded in New York City on May 16th, 2024. To learn more about Bio or to hear other episodes in our podcast series, please visit our website, biographersinternational.org. I'm Bio member Jenny Skoog in New York City. Alani Hodge created our theme music. Until next time, thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.